I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of I Do Not Have Trash Politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast.
So I wanted to title this episode Alchemy of Change to create a space for us to talk about the wonder and awe and magic of change together. I have the book Atlas of the Heart by Brené Brown, which is this really cool, almost like glossary of different human experiences. And she writes about awe and wonder. And she says, both awe and wonder are often experienced in response to nature, art, music, spiritual experiences, or ideas. We often use awe and wonder interchangeably. Researchers Ulrich Wegger and Johannes Wegman explain that wonder inspires the wish to understand. Awe inspires the wish to let shine, to acknowledge, and to unite. When feeling awe, we tend to simply stand back and observe to provide a stage for the phenomenon to shine. So for me, alchemy of change isn't the end result of a change or transformation in itself, which is like also amazing. Like when we come to the end of, you know, a cycle of change within ourselves, the alchemy of change, I think, is our relationship to change, how we're able to actually experience or appreciate or even like notice change at its most basic measure. Alchemy is oftentimes spoken or written about in relationship to things like spirituality, the occult, and even sort of like magical symbolism that often emerges from like ancient stories about the human condition or the human experience. And I was thinking, truly, what is a more human experience than change and transformation? What is more spiritual than nature? What is more magical than change itself? And I think that those things are all related, right? Like change and transformation and our humanity and our nature and spirituality and magic, like they're all kind of one in the same, or at least related. And that excerpt from Atlas of the Heart had me thinking that while it's not always possible for us to be like in awe or, you know, in wonder of the change that's happening, to stand back and be like, oh my God, this is like incredible, right? I'm realizing that even the smallest metric of wonder and awe, which is noticing and paying attention, is one of the only ways that I can think of to actually appreciate change as this sort of natural and inevitable thing. And in particular, this is powerful for me when that change that's happening is painful, or I'm suffering, or I'm sort of navigating my way through marginalization or oppression. So that's what we're going to talk about today. How do you feel about this, you know, concept of the alchemy of change and anything that's resonating for you so far?
I'm really appreciating it. I think I have often been really captivated by and drawn to these orientations towards change that are more reverent. They really do resonate with me at a deep level, even though so often change is so scary, right? Like it's scary and it's uncomfortable. And I think so often I resist it, which I'm sure is probably a, you know, a pretty common experience of resisting change in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But it is inevitable. I mean, it's happening literally with each second. So
with each breath, yes.
Yeah, I think I like the idea of shifting to a kind of more awe-filled or reverent way of noticing, or yeah, even just noticing itself feels really helpful, because I think if we can maybe even in a neutral way notice that change is happening all the time, maybe it can kind of take away some of that fear, because it's unfamiliar and yet it's not, if it's happening at every second, right?
Right. I know. I love that. Thank you. So I'm wondering, given the fact that I started off with these frameworks of like awe, wonder, and even noticing, are there any things, any experiences that you have, you know, navigated through that you have noticed or brought your attention to, which have helped you appreciate change specifically within yourself? Or are there any things recently that you've experienced an awe or a wonder about the way that change is happening within you? So I want to create the space for us to think about change, not just from like this, you know, potentially like hyper positive place of like awe and wonder. And so I'm curious if there's anything that comes to mind, any experiences where you were like, you caught yourself just noticing, or you have caught yourself going like, holy shit, here I am now, and here I was then, and having that sort of appreciation for the changes that have been happening within you.
I mean, one thing that definitely comes to mind is just my sort of approach to life and taking care of myself. Mm-hmm. Like, we were reviewing a lot of the changes that have taken place in our lives last episode. And one of the things I was remembering looking back to when we first started this was how busy I was, like how much I was working and what that looked like. And there was so little self-care. It was just like so much work, so much activity, so much busyness. Mm-hmm. And now I know that I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And there is like so much more care taken in terms of like monitoring how I'm feeling and taking care of myself, because I know that I can't push that for very long. And I think on one hand, there is a lot of awe that I can experience in how much that's shifted for me and sort of the skills that I've developed and how much better I know my body and how much better I understand how bodies work and, you know, like how healing and care has to take place. Mm. But at the same time, it can also still be like scary, or it can still be like, there can still be a lot of grief maybe, or even resentment, you know, looking at other people who can really or do really like push themselves to the limit and knowing I can't do that. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I don't know if that answers your question, but it's a very complicated maybe relationship with that. It's like I can feel the awe and at the same time still feel the resistance maybe.
Yeah. And it's not as like easy. It's just like it sounds like at the end of the day, there's been a lot of noticing of where you actually have your own capacity limits and what you need and how you want to be showing up for yourself. And I also want to say, like, I'm in awe of you, and I am very like, I hate the word inspired because it feels like it's like, I mean, you're an inspiration. I mean, you are, but I am in awe of the ways that you have shown me what it looks like to take care of your body in its present and stay with and be with like what is real for you right now, and creating the necessary boundaries that you need to, and always communicating those things about like just where you're at. I think in an incredibly ableist society and world like that, and as a person who's also for now non-disabled, like I think that that is really powerful and an invitation for me to also think about like how I can appreciate how my body will change and how my body is changing and how, you know, like that's an inevitability. And some of it is not just an inevitability. Some of it is a result of like marginalization and oppression, right? Or, you know, driven by marginalization or oppression or amplified by marginalization or oppression. But I think that that is also a really powerful thing that I've witnessed in you. And I know, like you just said, it's not like it's always positive and always sort of like, I'm in awe of myself. It's so wondrous, so incredible. Because another part of Atlas of the Heart that I find really interesting is she also, Brené also talks about like confusion, right? Sort of like there's like another side of awe and wonder, which is like we're confused and things confound us or bewilder us or, you know, leave us kind of like, what's happening, right? And it sounds like there's also that aspect of noticing, you know, how your own body and health and what that looks like is changing over time is also like a confusing thing and something you're always learning about.
Absolutely. Which, I mean, I feel like that's true of most changes. I also feel yes. like I have a really good foundation when it comes to relationship skills, you know, being a therapist and just having done a lot of work in relationships to have really healthy, emotionally mature relationships. When my relationships are changing or just things are coming up, I still feel totally caught off guard by it or confused by it or kind of struggle
right.
through trying to figure out how to weather changes with someone. It's like,
right.
I don't know if there's very many changes that I experience in any area that don't feel very confusing in the middle of them. You know, does it ever yeah. just feel like that's straightforward? Fair. I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's hard to bring, I aspire to bring that level of like, I don't know if it's groundedness, but an appreciation for even the things that are like bewildering and confusing and stressful around change. So yeah, I'm with you.
But if anything, it's almost just learning to trust the process of change and mm-hmm. know that I've been very confused and unsettled before and gotten through it. So it's less that it's like,
yes,
not confusing or not scary or not uncertain and more just kind of trusting yourself to get through it. I don't know. Do you relate to that?
No, yeah. I like that a lot. I think I want us to talk a little bit about change and in the lens of like transformative justice, because like you said, and like we both said, like change and transformation are necessary and inevitable and also like uncomfortable yeah. fucking things, right? And transformative justice asks us to be honest about harm. So like that might be some discomfort, that might be the ways that we are experiencing systems of oppression or systems of oppression are actually marginalizing us even further than we actually were before. It might be things that are outside of our control or outside of systems control that are happening within our body. But nonetheless, TJ asks us to be honest about harm, where it comes from, you know, who it's impacting, and how we can transform the conditions that made the harm happen, mm-hmm. right? And so I want us to turn that lens inward to think of the times when actually the call was coming from inside the house, right? Like, you know, when I was the one, me to me, you know, like harming myself, yeah. right? And what it means to transform the conditions within myself that allow for me to continue harming myself. And so, yeah, you laughed. And I guess my question is, you know, has the call ever come from inside the house for you, babes? You know, like the way that you feel about yourself or the way that you are on this journey of just like loving yourself and healing and repairing the ways that we've navigated through systems and structures and also how those systems and structures live within us. You know, we turn in on ourselves almost. What's that call from inside the house sounding like, I guess? Sorry, big questions.
Yeah. The call is so often coming from inside the house. I think like internalized ableism is such a huge one. Still, I've been doing this work for many years to try to unlearn that and to try to learn how to live with chronic illness and take care of myself and resist ableism. But there is still so often a voice that's like so hard on myself about like what I can do and what I can't do, and even like how I cope with it and all of those things. And it makes me push myself a lot harder than I should in a lot of ways. It makes me just really blame myself for a lot of pain that I experience, physical and otherwise. Yeah. And I think there's also so many ways that it can kind of compound itself. It's like I'm hard on myself. And then because I'm being so hard on myself, I kind of isolate myself because I'm either ashamed to tell people what I'm feeling or
the needs that you have that might be arising.
Definitely that. Yeah. That's a huge one. I don't like want to ask people for things. Or I just almost feel like I don't deserve to have support in certain ways, or I should be okay without it or something. And so I think I deny myself a lot of like internal peace and a lot of external support by taking on those voices that come from the systems. You know, which even
that are like also living
within you. Even that I don't want to like blame myself for. It's like, of course I'm gonna internalize these systems. They're so loud, they're everywhere. It's not my fault that they affect me, but it's where's the line also though between then accountability, you know, in terms of like for holding yourself. Myself responsible, but also not like blaming myself too much.
I'm with you. Thank you for answering that like very big question, because I think my follow-up question, and I have to answer it myself first, is like, when is the call coming within the house for me, and how am I also in my own experiences, right? Like maybe internalizing things and weaponizing those things against myself. And I think it's always been about, and this will come as no surprise to you, of like the expectations for me to be perfect or like do everything and be everything to all people. And I don't know, I can't like pinpoint that on like one system of oppression, but I know that it comes from a place of just being so harmed by Christianity and religion and internalizing that and turning, you know, all of the I should do or I should be or I should think or whatever on myself, and not giving myself the grace that I know if I was really, you know, looking with a fine tooth comb through these biblical texts and stuff like that, that's so much about the message about Christianity is about like grace and like understanding and empathy and care. But it's like the sort of the indoctrinized ways that I was navigating through religion were really the thing that has harmed me. And I'm realizing that by realizing that it's the call is coming from inside the house, and that oftentimes it's like how I'm harming myself, I would say for me, and I'm curious if this resonates for you, is equal to the harm that I might experience outside of, you know, my own kind of personhood interacting with other people who wish me harm. That a lot of the times, like, I do violence to myself in the small ways that I like erase my own humanity and expect myself to be all things to all people, be perfect, whatever it might be. And it, like, the impact of that harm isn't so obvious, but I know it to be true because I know how I feel about myself, or I know how I felt about myself at my lowest points when like those, not just voices, but like the messaging around how you're supposed to be or how I'm supposed to be, what I'm supposed to think or what I'm supposed to do are incredibly like loud, or the loudest voice in my mind. And I can't even like make sense of where my own voice is. How does that land for you, or what does that, I guess, mean to you when it comes to thinking about your own experiences with internalized ableism and how that sort of like harmed you?
Yeah. Other people and the systems themselves can do much more damage to me than I can do to myself, because mm-hmm. there's a level of power
that they have.
Being discriminated against at work, which has happened to me, is always going to be worse than like being mean to myself inside my own head, or like being attacked or assaulted by another person is worse than having that happen inside my own head in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it's like there's also no greater healing than what happens within oneself. I feel like other people and systems can do so much less damage to me if I have like, I'm almost imagining, you know, this like bubble of like protection around me. Like if I have a solid boundary where I'm not going to take that in, you know, I'm not going to like take what you give me and like grab onto it and like swallow it and keep it within myself. Like if I refuse to do that, it's a very different experience. And of course it's not, it's like much more complicated than just a decision or something. Like I just decide
like an intellectual thought
that
of
this
like,
doesn't, but I guess it makes me really interested in those healing practices and what are the practices, the community practices, the things that we can do to like build that layer of protection. Because I do think it's like if the call coming from inside the house, I feel like the cure is like planted like in our own garden or something like that. You know, it's like that's like,
metaphor.
Yeah. Like it's like, that is where all the healing I think has to start from. I don't know. Does that resonate with you at all?
That really does resonate for me. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it does in particular because, once again, applying a TJ lens to it is like so much of the healing that's required within and under really oppressive systems has to start at like the smallest metric. And that oftentimes means that it has to start, or it does start, like inside of us. And then we practice and we cycle upwards, like Adrienne Marie Brown often talks about, right? So I that does resonate a lot for me. I'm curious about, you know, longing and desire and knowing almost like the why of change. And you so beautifully just spoke to like, you know, that visual of like this sort of like bubble of like protection, right? And so my question for you is like, what were the conditions within yourself that you knew or continue to know need to shift or to change? And what were your own longings or desires for what you wanted those conditions or what you want those conditions to be? It sounds like, I mean, I can start answering the question for you, but it sounds like part of it is like being more generous and compassionate with yourself and your own like very human needs. And, you know, extending that same care and generosity that you do to other people towards yourself, that's part of the conditions that, you know, need or are in shift right now as you're able to more, you know, easily say like, this is my boundary. This is what I can do. I need to rest more. But yeah, I'm curious about like what you have longed for, what you continue to long for or desire when it comes to like cultivating those conditions within yourself that allow for like that care or that softness.
I think there has been a deep desire for peace. Like I think,
yeah, you've said that before.
I've experienced just so much suffering, like so much like emotional, mental, physical suffering and just being so desperately unhappy and in so much pain in so many ways and feeling a lot of sort of angst. And I think I've really wanted peace and really needed peace and kind of gotten to like breaking points of like, I really can't live like this anymore.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that feeling of I can't live like this, it gives you a lot of, or gave me a lot of maybe courage and maybe motivation, I guess, to do a lot of things that maybe I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. You know, like I'm thinking about in terms of my career, like taking a lot of big risks, you know, to build a career that would give me more meaning, that would give me more fulfillment, that would make me not suffer so much. And then when it comes to like just the conditions of my life and my relationships, I think it's made me accept help a lot more and be a lot more vulnerable in like showing the parts of myself that maybe I feel ashamed of, maybe the parts of myself that are maybe more sensitive and in pain and all of those things. Like maybe it might feel really scary to show those parts of myself to people around me. But when the alternative is so much suffering, it's like, you know what? I feel like I have to take this risk, or I have to open myself up to let myself be supported and let myself be loved. And it's actually really scary to be loved in.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah. In that way where you allow someone to like see all of you and like come close to you, and you know, you give them parts of yourself that they could really like break if they chose to.
Yeah.
It's very scary, but it's just that like need for peace felt like it.
Yeah.
Ultimately
superseded the scary. Exactly. Yeah. It's like on the other side of that fear, or, and that big fear, not just like that fear little thing, but like all of the risks that you are taking to open yourself up to people seeing you in your fullness, seeing you in your, you know, and I don't mean this word in a negative way, but like in your neediness or the needs that you have that are natural, right? On the other side of that is like the peace that you so deeply want, which is like beautiful and so scary. Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah. What about you? Tell me about your longings.
Oh God. Can I be a biter and say peace? No, it's in part peace. I think it's like wholeness. I've always longed to feel and to be in the existence, not just to feel, but to like be whole. And I think that word is really important to me because so much of Christianity is about how you need this external big God daddy in the sky to like fulfill all of who you are. So you're incomplete. And in fact, you're sinful and terrible and all these other things. And so like, I've always felt like wholeness was the thing that I was really looking for, even though I think previously it was actually something else, like perfection. But now it's like, yeah, wholeness. And you have a question.
Yeah, I want to ask for you, how does wholeness feel different than perfection?
Damn. Ooh, that's such a great question. Thank you for that. I think that perfection is like, it assumes that there's a binary of either you are it or you aren't it. And it like is rooted in a place of you're never going to be enough. And it's never going to be enough, and you're always striving. And I think for me, wholeness is more about getting more in touch with my enoughness. Mm. Getting more in tune with the ways that I already am enough.
It's like the opposite.
Yeah. But they feel so, they kind of feel, they kind of seem similar. Because like when you think of wholeness, you think of completion. It's like perfection. But like I think of wholeness as like all of the pieces are there. All of my pieces are there. Like I'm here. It's like my ability or willingness or desire or whatever to get to know those parts of myself and uncover those parts of myself and appreciate those parts of myself and bring a care and curiosity to those parts of myself. Like that is what feels, that's what wholeness feels like to me, I think. I don't know. I don't know if there's an answer to like, that was, I think, a subjective response, but that's how I would differentiate the two.
Yeah, that really resonates with me that like wholeness is something that you already have, right? It's like, it's not something you're striving for. It's like recognizing that it already exists within you.
Yeah.
And perfection, it's like you're on the hamster wheel forever.
Just running, girl, run it. And it's so interesting because, as you know, I'd like, have kept journals since I have journals, several journals, and I've kept them since 2009. So I've seen many a story arc. Yeah. Wow. I read my shit back and I'm like, wow, this is who we were. Is this who we are? Right. But even the ways that my relationship to change has changed. So it's like the thing within the thing. It's really interesting to me. When I look back at old sort of like journal entries, I realize that I've always had this very strong desire to embrace change, but it was the thing that was driving the change was fear and inadequacy. And it was from a place of like deficit and scarcity and lack because the image in my mind was perfection. And I've looked back at journal entries and like I'm like reading about how scared I was for the future. And I've always wanted to like hold on to things so tightly. Like that fear has made me just like want to grip onto things and have a lot of control. I've always craved control, mainly over my mind and my body because Christianity, baby. And those were the things that I felt like I could control and that also needed to change. Because if I can control them, that means I can change them. And if I can change them, what I'm moving towards is perfection. And yeah, I'm just like trying to recall when that source motivation for change switched from fear to something else. I don't know when that happened, but I know what it feels like in my body. It's like, I remember feeling so much more unsettled in my body and frenetic, like live, like buzzing and not in a good way. So yeah, I think that that is part of why I think the alchemy of change is such a powerful concept, because it's like that I think is quite, I don't know, magical to even reflect on how I relate to change. And so I'm curious for you, how has your relationship to change
changed?
You know, how has that shifted over time? Let's get real meta with it.
Yeah, like, it's similar. I think I always was trying to make changes in my life based on a feeling of not being good enough, a real like self-loathing and a real feeling of needing to make myself into somebody else or something else, or, you know, this sort of image that was given to me by
totally
white supremacy and ableism and all of the systems and how people around me embodied them. And now I don't want to say I never come from that place. Like I think it can still kind of sneak quietly in there without me always catching it. Mm-hmm. But I think now changes in my life more often feel like they're from a place of building on something, you know, of like,
right.
I already have in many ways like a strong foundation of self-respect, self-care, self-love in some ways. I'm not trying to say I don't still struggle with that, but I do feel like there is a much stronger foundation in my life, and then changes add to
that
what I already have.
So it's like that recognition that you're not in deficit, you actually have, and you've noticed that, you've taken that into account.
Exactly. And even when changes maybe pop up, maybe I'm not trying to initiate a certain change, but it feels sort of imposed on me for whatever reason. Maybe it's people around me, or just my body or the world or whatever. When changes are imposed, there's still maybe a sense of I have a foundation that allows me to work with that change in a constructive way, or makes me feel like I can trust that ultimately the change is necessary and will add to what I have in some way, even if it's something that I don't want. You know, that I'll still be able to, like, take something rich from
something it. Something from it.
Yeah, rich and meaningful. So I think that is kind of the direction, like this, like the overarching direction of the shifts in my relationship to change, even though, you know, you could take me on a particular day and it might not. It might seem more,
it might not look
exactly. It's like it's not linear. Yeah. How about you?
Oh man, I think my relationship to change has shifted in a sense that I think I'm a lot better at paying attention to the small ways that I've changed, or the small pieces of evidence that change is happening, and appreciating those things. And my desire for control still exists.
Of course.
I'm not gonna lie, on a podcast. still want to control everything. But my acceptance of what it is that I actually have control over has increased, like, by a lot. And that means that I'm able to focus a lot more of my attention on that. And I think that also what it is that I believe needs change has changed, like I said before. And so I'm no longer... I still feel inadequacy. I still feel like I don't know enough. I still feel insecure. I still feel all those things. I no longer see those negative feelings as indicators that I am, like, worthless. Like, I no longer do that totalizing thing that I think I used to do. And so my relationship to change is more, like, appreciative, I guess, now. And it's also a lot more enmeshed in my almost day-to-day with just noticing feelings and noticing how I'm doing and noticing how I react to things. And it's like that has been honestly quite joyful and pleasant and amazing for me to be able to just, like, appreciate almost the present. Because so much about, I think, personal transformation or, like, personal change or, like, goal setting is about, like, these things we want to have happen that in actuality could come to fruition, but, like, in years' time, with, like, so much more resources and scaffolding and that shit gets me really, or it used to get me, like, really stressed out. Like, I want to be perfect today. I want to be whole today. And now I'm like, if I'm whole right now and my wholeness is informed by the change that is ongoing, then, like, can I, with, like, almost a microscope, like, look down and see all the little changes that are happening and appreciate those things? Does that make sense at all?
Yeah. I mean, I guess what popped into my head when you say, if you can realize that you're whole right now, I thought, then what's the rush? Mm-hmm. If you're not coming from a place that's of deficit, really good, then what's the rush? Like, why not just take things a little bit slower and notice them as they come and really pay attention to, you know, do I have capacity for a little bit more right now, or do I need to rest here for a second?
Yeah.
You know, if you're running away from like a worthlessness, you don't have a second to pause because you're so eager to like frantic. Escape that.
Yeah, totally. That's such a great point. What's the rush? Mm-hmm. I love that a lot. So on this podcast, we love Adrienne Marie Brown.
We do. Okay?
And so in her book, we really do.
We stan.
We've quoted her for years.
We'll say.
In her book, Holding Change, the Way of Emergent Strategy, Facilitation, and Mediation, which I have in front of me and I draw on often, she talks about how adaptations are guided by what we feel within ourselves and in our relationships to others. And she writes, our feelings when we tend to them are our nature guiding us to evolve, grow, break fatal habits, generate health and healing. Feelings are not the truth, but can often face you in the right direction, pointed toward the truth. And then she goes on to say that acknowledging big feelings, particularly fear, can open us up to understand feelings as data and help us take appropriate action. And so I'm like really obsessed with that passage for a few reasons. One, because she's writing specifically to facilitators, and that is your girl. Mm-hmm. And so it's just really affirming for me. I also really appreciate how she incorporates the senses and like focuses on how feeling is also an integral part of change and transformation. In workshops that I facilitate, I often invite participants to really think about and just sort of pay attention to how they're feeling as they are learning and as I'm speaking or whatever I'm saying. And I ask them to bring a curiosity to how they feel. And if something comes up for them, I invite them to think about their feelings as a source of information that can be like really helpful cues for where we might need to focus more attention in our learning or unlearning. So the feeling itself is something we allow ourselves to experience. I oftentimes say to people, like, if I'm speaking and you're like, I wish that Nick would just shut up. Like, I just don't like this woman. And people always laugh and think that I'm funny and self-deprecating. And I'm like, if you're feeling that feeling, just notice that you're feeling that feeling. Like, I want us to be able to try our best to take a step back if we're descending into rage, anger, whatever it might be. So we allow ourselves to feel the feeling. And then the message of the feeling is what leads us to make a decision, right? Like how we want to change, what do we want to do with that information? Do I want to descend into feelings of fragility? Do I want to completely allow myself to shut down if I feel challenged by what Nick is saying? Or do I want to use this information of like my feelings coming up of embarrassment or shame or guilt as a source of information, as more curiosity? So I'm wondering, in your work as a therapist, you obviously work with clients and support them in navigating not just like feelings, but experiences and trauma. How does the concept of sort of like feelings as information and as feelings as this like invitation for curiosity, how does that relate or land with you?
Oh, that is everything to me as a therapist. And that's the exact message, because I think the very, very common thing is to judge ourselves for our feelings, or to think we should feel a certain way, we shouldn't feel a certain way. And that is it's taught to us by the world and reinforced by the world all the time. And so that is such a huge central part of therapy in the way that I practice, at least, is learning to take away that layer of self-judgment, because it's like there's the feeling itself and then there's all the suffering that's created by resisting and judging our feelings. And so it's like if we can just let our feelings exist and just notice them and just listen to the information that they're giving us, they don't get to drive the car necessarily. It's like, it's not like, okay, yeah. if you acknowledge your fear, then that means that you can't do the thing because now you're listening to the fear. It's like, you don't have to obey the fear, but yeah. if you can listen to it, it actually might help you do the thing. Because if you ignore it, the fear is just going to yell mm-hmm. so much louder. So yeah, feelings as information and just taking it as like a neutral piece of information that you can choose to do what you will with, that is everything to me.
Is it helpful to create almost like a distance between the feelings that we are experiencing and the significance or the lesson that those feelings are conveying? Because like sometimes I try to allow myself to like feel your feelings, you know, that I like feel your feelings, allow yourself to feel those, if you're feeling sad, like allow yourself to feel sad. But I also, it sounds like there's space for like creating some distance and recognizing that like you aren't your feelings. Mm-hmm. Like your feelings are your nature really coming up and showing up in some way, shape or form. So yeah, I'm curious about that distance piece because that to me is where there's space for the sort of alchemy, right? Like that is like that pause or that noticing. And I'm not a therapist. So I'm always curious if you have any sort of things to say around distance between feelings, or is it helpful for us to feel our feelings and then, you know, process afterwards? Yeah.
I think it can be useful to take a little bit of distance so we don't get overwhelmed. I think also mm-hmm. that distance, that step back, can help us to notice the complexities, you know, to notice the different parts that like one part of us feels another way or a particular way, but there's chances are a lot of other parts that are feeling a lot of other things. Also kind of thinking back to sort of the mediation we were talking about last time, I feel like there's so many assumptions we might make. Like sometimes, you know, maybe I'm having a friend who's going through a really hard time and there's a part of me that feels frustrated with them. So then usually or often there's going to be a part of me that's like, wow, I'm a horrible person because my friend is going through this hard time and I feel frustrated. Like I'm awful. Right.
Right.
But if we can create a little bit of distance to just notice the frustration and ask some questions about it and be curious about it, we might learn that I'm not feeling frustrated because I actually judge that person. It's because I am having a hard time too.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of capacity and I'm feeling overtaxed and I may be giving too much, mm-hmm. you know, as an example, right? It's like,
totally.
I'm just thinking about how many assumptions we might make, thinking about again, like the transformative justice process, like the different people coming to the table. It's so easy to make assumptions about why does this person feel this way or why is this person behaving this way? And it's only through giving a lot of space and time and like allowing the process to really unfold that we might give ourselves the opportunity to learn that maybe our assumptions are actually wrong.
I really like that. Because in what you've just said, it also drives home the point of we show up in a process and we're not perfect, mm-hmm. right? Like the way that I try my best to embody support in this hypothetical situation where your friend mm-hmm. is going through the thing and you're being impatient, the way that I embody support is going to be probably mediated by my capacity mm-hmm. at the time, you know, where I'm at, like mentally, mm-hmm. physically, socially, like whatever it might be. And there's room mm-hmm. for that. It's not, the expectation isn't that we show up in perfect ways all the time, but that we're also able to recognize that in our showing up as we are, that might also contribute to, you know, harm, or that might also contribute to healing, or that might make it more challenging for us to get to the heart of what the problem actually is. Like there's going to be consequences for that, but it's not like we have to fix that, or it's not like those things are necessarily or inherently wrong or bad.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's such an important part of this transformative justice for self is allowing for that imperfection. And I think it also really gives a lot of space for change to unfold, right? If we don't have this expectation of perfection, and if we can allow ourselves to show up to each moment of the change process, however we can.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that takes away, it doesn't make change not scary, and it doesn't make change not challenging. But I think there's like a particular layer of suffering that maybe gets removed when it's okay to like one day show up to the change process totally like ready to tackle it, and then the next day sort of like crawl with like a blanket over ourselves, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh God, I have to show up again today. Yeah, for sure. And that there's room for that, like for all ways of showing up. I want to sort of switch gears one last time and talk to you about, or talk with you about, nature. Because I think so much of what you just mentioned around the fact that we can show up in these, you know, change processes as we are, reminds me of a lot of what Adrian talks about in Holding Change, that, you know, feelings are part of nature. And she speaks to this so well. Feelings come and go. Like, nature changes, our feelings oftentimes change as well. They pass, they stay, they can emerge at times we don't expect. And I think that there's something that's really powerful about, you know, the magic of affect and the magic of feelings, because it's like they just show up and then they just go away. Like, the, you know, like feelings really are
like the weather.
Yeah. And how, for me anyways, how easily feelings can be mistaken for beliefs or for thoughts or for the absolute truth. And I'm recognizing that the more I can witness the ways that I'm changing, even on a small level, it opens me up and opens my mind up to see how change is happening on like larger scales or even in smaller ways out there to systems. Or, and by that I mean like the ways that folks who are also so hungry and longing for change are agitating those systems as well. I want to move us into a part of the episode before we close and I share the BIPOC of the week. But I want to talk more about like just nature and how it's made me appreciate change in a way that I honestly didn't think possible. I don't enjoy the winter. I don't like the cold. But when I'm in the middle of winter and I'm like outside for a walk, I notice and appreciate and witness so many things that I had not been able to in, you know, summer or spring. So I went for a walk the other day and I was like, oh my God, you know, these trees have no leaves. I can only see their branches. It really struck me that the branches are the things that support the leafy foliage. Like you need the branch. It looks really barren, right? But it's still a structure. It's still holding the thing up. The tree and its like leaflessness, it looks really vulnerable. And honestly, it looks kind of little because you're like, oh, the leaves give it some like fullness. It makes it look a lot bigger and like more just lush than it does in the winter. And I say that to share, or I share that to say, noticing has helped me really appreciate that even in the seasons of like barrenness where I can only see the structures, that there's still something there that's offering some support and keeping the thing upright. And then I thought about like just seasons in general, about how matter melts and loosens and sort of like lets go and eases. And it made me think about like allowance and permission and acceptance as we change. And, you know, also in the winter, we had a terrible amount of snow in the sort of lower mainland and turned into icy mess, and sort of that solidifying and that building and that tightening and that strengthening, boundary setting, for example, comes to mind with what you had shared earlier. And that brings me to our BIPOC of the week. I want to share, I took a little field trip with my sister Jo over the weekend. And we went to the Vancouver Art Gallery together, and we spent most of our time in this one exhibit called A Line That Bends But Does Not Break. And it's this like art exhibit by Goodsan Glanz, Robert Davidson, who is a Haida and Tlingit artist. So to the uninitiated, Haida, Gwai, and Tlingit territories are on the sort of Pacific Northwest coast. And we just spent so much time like looking at all of the various depictions of animals and nature, the expressions in particular that he so artfully crafts into all of his work. And it was just like a really good reminder for me of all of the ways that nature teaches us about change and about sort of learning and expressions, or learning from the expressions that we see in nature and see in ourselves and see in others. And I was just staring at these paintings and this graphic work, and it stirred some questions in me, so I want to share them with you. I was looking at this, a couple of paintings, and I noticed that there were these, like, he used eyes in so many animals. Like, there were just, like, a ton of eyes everywhere. And the eyes made me think of, you know, how often we are sizing things up and scrutinizing and appraising things and mistrusting things. And so I want to offer us the question, what are we skeptical or judgmental of in the ways that we're changing? There is this piece of art that had a beaver with like tons of teeth, just like really big gnarly teeth, which was great. It was really funny to me. And it made me think of like devouring and indulging. And so I want to offer us the question, what do you desire? What is that longing that you are trying to move towards? What are you hungry for? How has your appetite figuratively changed? There was this image of an eagle soaring, and it was like in this sort of like in rapture, like just completely free. And the question that I have for us to think about is, as I'm changing, what comes easily? Like, where am I soaring? What feels effortless? Where is there ease? Where am I being lifted to or carried beyond to? You know, what makes me feel capable or strong? There was a frog that was just like a very hilarious looking frog. And it reminds me of hopping and moving about. And so, you know, we can ask ourselves in the midst of change, where would I rather be? Like, where, you know, if you're just like, hurry this shit up, I want to go, 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 right? What does keeping busy or preoccupied do for me as I'm trying to notice the changes happening within myself? And then the last image that I want to reference was this octopus. And it was like contorting and squeezing and twisting and pulling. And it made me think of, how am I being stretched as I'm, you know, changing or transforming? Where is my center or my sense of groundedness? Like, where am I rooted? Where is there tension or room for nuance or, you know, space for the both and? And so I just want to express like a ton of gratitude to the artist, Goodsan Glanz, Robert Davidson, for his work. Please check it out if you are in the sort of Vancouver area. It's such beautiful art. And I want to just, yeah, remind us that like nature teaches us so much about how we can look to ourselves and the transformations happening within us, because we are also part of nature.
Yeah, it's colonialism has brought us so far away from that truth that we are a part of nature. Yeah. And so I'm really thankful to you and to that artist and that exhibition that's reminding us that we are a part of nature. And so these aren't just metaphors. It's like, it's more than that. It's yes. Like really reminding us of like who we are and the sort of principles that are underpinning everything that we're doing. So really grateful for that reminder and those questions to reflect on. Thank you.